is based on the spirit of my grandmother, whose name was also Estelle. They called her Stella. I have thought questions. I have discussion questions. I have writing assignments. I have sample writings. I have research papers. I've got projects.
Have you heard of this other book, Out of My Mind?
No. Huh.
Bringing your family history to life with New York Times bestseller Sharon Draper.
And now it's time for another edulicious episode of the Bentley Brothers Podcast, bringing you what's current and what works in education. Here are your hosts, Scott and Tim Bentley.
Bentley Brothers, Bentley, Bentley Brothers, bringing education information like no other. Bentley Brothers, yep. Bentley, Bentley Brothers, bringing education information like no other. Yep. First name Bentley, last name Brothers, bringing education.
That's right, Scott. Today on the show, she needs no introduction. If you don't know who Sharon Draper is, you need to get out a little bit more often and do some reading and find out what's in this world, because she is an amazing person, amazing author. Let me tell you a little bit about Dr. Draper. She's a professional educator as well as an accomplished writer. She has been honored as the National Teacher of the Year, is a 5-time winner of the Coretta Scott King Literary Award, and is a New York Times best-selling author with Out of My Mind, my favorite children's book of all time, staying on the list for almost 2 years. She was selected as Ohio's Outstanding High School Language Arts Educator, Ohio Teacher of the Year, and was chosen as a NCNW Excellence in Teaching Award winner. She is a Milken Family Foundation National Educator Award winner and was the Duncanson Artist in Residence for the Taft Museum. That's about maybe, what, a tenth of the bios, but we've got to have a show here. So welcome to the show, Dr. Draper.
I'm very, very glad to be here.
Oh, gosh. And we, again, are honored to have you back on the show and to talk about your newest book. Just start us off. Tell us a little bit about Stella by Starlight and where the idea came from.
Well, Stella by Starlight is based roughly on my grandmother. When she was a little girl, she wrote in a journal. Nobody paid her any attention. When she was 10 years old, she would scribble in a journal. That little girl grew up to be a mother, and she had my daddy. My daddy grew up to be a father, and he had me. And we would visit her. She lived in North Carolina every summer, and we would spend time on her farm, and we would play, and that's where I learned about cows and pigs and chickens and everything that I ever learned about being on a farm, I learned from my grandmother. Did you know that cow's milk is warm when it comes out of the cow? That I remember being so astounded. I said, oh, this is warm, and she said, it just came out of the cow. What do you want? But I didn't know about the journal. So many, many years passed, and when she finally passed away in 1983, just before she passed, she gave my father her journal, the last remaining journal.
Wow.
And she said, do something with this. And so he kept it for a long time. And then finally he said, you're some kind of writer. Do something with this. So he gave me the journal to do something with. So it took a very, very long time for me to figure out how to turn the ramblings of a girl who was probably written in maybe 1915 and the ramblings in her mind and turn it into something that kids today would want to read. There is almost nothing in this book that is word for word from her journal. It is her spirit. It is the spirit of a little girl who was determined to write. She would go outside at night and write. So that's where the starlight comes from. So it's her essence. It's her spirit that is in this book, not word for word. She did not say this, but what's on page 25. It's what she felt, and so it's my tribute to her.
So it kind of gets you inside of the head of her rather than telling her story per se.
It's not even in her, not my grandmother's head, because Stella became her own person. Stella became a real person of her own. So she no longer was identified with my grandmother. Stella is 100% fictional. Mm-hmm. She is based on the spirit of my grandmother, whose name was also Estelle. They called her Stella. Mm.
Now tell us the basic plot of the book for those that might potentially want to read your book.
Okay. Stella is 10 years old. She has an 8-year-old brother. No, Stella's 11. And she has an 8-year-old brother that whose name is Jojo. And they live on a little bitty farm in a town called Bumblebee, North Carolina. And I made that up. There really is no Bumblebee. I had to check and make sure there wasn't, because I would have gotten calls from the real Bumblebee. Anyway, it's a town of Bumblebee, North Carolina. And it's very small, but very close-knit because it's very small. It's a little isolated, all-black community in North Carolina. And I set it in 1932, which is really closer to my father's childhood than my grandmother. But 1932, there was an election. There was a change in the air. It was the end of a Republican president and a Democratic president was coming in. It was a time of change. It was also a time of social oppression. There was voting was allowed for African Americans, but discouraged, if you can put it like that. And so the people in this community had to, if there was a problem, they had to deal with it. They had to figure out what they were going to do themselves. So Stella and her brother in the very first chapter see they're out in the woods at night because her little brother had to go to the bathroom and the bathroom was outside. And so they see in the woods in the distance a cross on fire, a burning cross, which is a sign that the Klan is moving around. Of course, it's an election year, so the Klan is just kind of planning threats. There's no definite threat. So the community has to come together and say, what are we going to do? They can't call the local sheriff because the local sheriff was probably out there with the cross burners. So they have to figure out how to deal with their community's problems by themselves. And it's a very strong, very close-knit community. The other plot line that goes along with it. Stella's in the fifth grade and she's about to flunk fifth grade because she does not write well. Now my grandmother loved to write and she was probably a natural writer, but I made Stella not so good as a writer because I think there are more students in school who have difficulty with writing than find it very, very easy. So Stella struggles, and she goes outside at night to write to practice because she is so afraid that her mother will find out from her teacher because they go to the same church and they sing next to each other in the choir, and she knows that eventually her teacher will tell her mother, Stella's not doing very well in school, and failure in school was just not an option. Parents did not allow that. So Stella is struggling to figure out how she gets the ideas that are in her head onto her piece of paper. And I actually show the writing that Stella does in the book, her practice writings. I show it in the book so you can see her progress from really, really bad to pretty good near the end because she practices at it. So you want more of the plot? The rest you're going to
No, that's fantastic.
More stuff.
I think I would love to hear you just talk about if a teacher is using something like Stella by Starlight in their classroom, how would you envision them using that book as far as the instruction side of it, maybe the conversations that this may inspire with their students, and we're talking in fifth or sixth grade. How do you envision that happening in a classroom?
I think historical fiction is real important for young people because you can learn history without having to read a history book by reading the story of a character at that particular period. You can learn that. So there's a real good connection between history and literature. And, you know, all the new curriculum, they want students to have that connection between literature and history and the cross-curricular connection. So that's one thing. The other thing is the writing, because the writing is actually in there, the practice of the writing, the practice of the of what Stella does to get better. I have on my website, which is SharonDraper.com, I have study questions for Stella and every other book. I have thought questions. I have discussion questions. I have writing assignments. I have sample writings. I have research papers. I've got projects. Everything is already done for Stella by Starlight on my website, which is SharonDraper.com. And
how much does that cost?
It's free.
Just free.
Go to my website, and I put it there for teachers because I'm a teacher. I know
what a resource.
You don't have time to go and find this. So just go to the website, click on study guides, and there's one for every single book.
Holy
and
cow.
I wrote them. They're not written by some company that says, what color is the blue button on Mary's blue dress? These are actual analysis questions and thoughtful questions. And I take quotes from the book and I say, okay, compare this passage with this. Let's do a comparative analysis. It's high level thinking and it's done by a teacher who knows what students need.
Yeah. And let me just add to that, that, you know, I said in the introduction that you were National Educator of the Year. So we're talking to somebody that's not just an author, but that understands how to educate students. So, wow, what a phenomenal resource for teachers to have that. And thank you so much for sharing that.
Well, I make it a point to provide that for teachers for every single book because I think it's important and I know what it's like in the classroom. You have so many other things to do. You don't have time to think about that. So I did it for you.
Awesome.
Hey, Dr. Draper, if I'm, you know, when I'm teaching writing, how much should be student choice driven and how much should be, you know, coordinated with some kind of a prompt?
I think a good idea is to get students to come up with some of the prompts. If you tell them, okay, we need to write a proof. We need to write a persuasive essay. Let's think of some prompts. Let the students do the prompts. Students do better when they care about what they're writing about. If you give them a boring prompt on something they do not care about, you will get a boring piece of writing. If you give them a prompt on, okay, which is better, Minecraft or some other game, they will do a wonderfully definitive job in describing it because they actually care. The best writing comes from people who actually care about the words that they are writing down. We give it as an exercise as if it has nothing to do with who we are, and that is wrong. Writing comes from within us, and we take the inner part of writing away and make it some sort of a structure. Of course, kids don't like it. They will learn if they are built into the project.
Awesome. Hey, let me get back to the book for a second too. That was a great tip. I loved it. You mentioned the historical fiction aspect and that obviously there's history in your book and you did allude to some things like the election. Are there other historical pieces of information that students will read by reading your book?
A lot of students today don't know very much about the Ku Klux Klan. It is not a major figure in the book, but it is important because at that time in history, they resorted to threats and intimidation. Of course, the Klan is still very much alive and well. And students have written me, I'm so glad the Klan is gone. Thank you, sweetheart, for having that wonderfully optimistic thought. That's not true. So, but I've got that. I've got, I try not to make a historical fiction book heavy with history. It's just, these are things that exist. In 1932, if you were cold, you went outside and got some wood from the pile, which you had chopped to warm up the house. If you wanted eggs, you went out to the hen house. If you wanted milk, you went and milked the cow. Only one family in the whole town had a car, and she kept it covered up in a garage because it was so special. She wasn't going to drive that thing and mess it up. And very few people had electricity, and very few people had telephones. So historical social context, I think, are more important for students to understand what's actually going on and, you know, what it was like to live like that. Stella got her first pair of shoes for the year somewhere about three-fourths of the way through the book. Kids went to school barefoot. My father used to tell me all the time, of course we went barefoot. We didn't need shoes till it got cold.
And you know what I love that that's inspired by historical fictions and that Stella by Starlight I'm sure does is inspires kids to just be curious. Be curious about what was happening and want to know more, which it doesn't mean you have to necessarily tell it all in the book, I think. And so that's a great thing, is it just it creates that curiosity for kids to go want to learn more on their own and figure out and learn about the history and the things that are happening with inside of a historical fiction like Stella by Starlight.
Right, right. And I try not to make it heavy. I try not to make it overbearing. I try not to make it so that I don't want kids to be inundated with the history. I want them to be fascinated with the character, first of all. I want them to fall in love with Stella and her struggles and her fears. And Stella ends up being a little heroine. She doesn't plan on being a hero, but Stella ends up being instrumental in a number of heroic events in the story. I didn't realize how many times I made her a hero until a fourth grader pointed it out. Did you know? I said, oh, thank you, dear.
So, Dr. Draper, what's in the works right now that you're working on coming up from the pen of one of the greatest kids authors of all time?
Oh, gee, I don't know who that is, but I
we're talking to her.
I'm working on a historical fiction that takes place in 1963.
Oh, that was a good year.
Yes, it was.
And it was an amazing year.
So much good music in 1963. So I've got a soundtrack for the book. I've got the Motown and all of that is going to be playing in the background of the story. But it takes place in 1963 in Cleveland, and that's where I grew up, Cleveland, Ohio. And one of the main characters is a librarian, because when I was a child, the librarian down the street was a major figure in my life, and I doubt if she knew it at the time. She was just doing what she does, but she was a major, major influence in making me into the reader that I am today. So I didn't give any plot away. I just told you when it is.
And I'm assuming you're not building Tim Bedley's birth into that book at all, or I'm just kidding.
Come on, please, please.
Well, it does, you know, the historical fiction gets closer and closer and closer. It's like yesterday is historical fiction. It feels
like yesterday to me.
Yeah.
Well, and Kennedy was killed in 63, so
November of 63. A number of pivotal things happened. The March on Washington was 1963. A lot happened that year. So
yes, it did.
There's an awful lot of history to put into the book.
Very cool.
Awesome. So when can we expect that to come out?
I have no idea.
Great answer.
We are still working on it. It's going to be a while. I'm still working. It is a work in progress.
Very good. All right, Scott, you got anything else?
No, I mean, I'm just blown away. And again, so grateful to have Dr. Draper here on the show. I almost find myself speechless, Dr. Draper.
Oh, please.
No, we just we love listening to you. Our audience loves listening to you just tell stories. You're not only a good writer, you're a great storyteller.
Oh, so, speaking of stories, let me add this real quick. I believe that storytelling actual real storytelling as a function, as a work of art, as a piece of literature is something that we need to maintain. I am the I'm a member of the National Association of Black Storytellers. I go to their conference every year, and I sit at the feet of these people who tell amazing stories about the past. They're cultural gems. So because of that, I included two stories in the book. There's a story told by a guy named Spoon Man, who's like a traveling salesman who comes through, and he is Netflix, and he tells stories when he comes to town, and everybody gathers around a fire at night under the starlight, and Spoon Man tells the story. And then I have another one near the end that the teacher tells, but the art of storytelling I've included. I've included music of the times, gospel music, folk music, poetry. I've included a lot of artistic cultural things into the story to make it like a quilt so that it is a whole.
I love good storytelling. Have you read Elijah Buxton by Christopher Paul Curtis?
Yes.
Don't you love the storytelling in that with the hoop snakes?
Yes.
Absolutely awesome. Okay, so we're going to switch gears right now with you and play our game show of the Bedley Brothers show, if you don't mind.
Sure.
Sharon, you are well known as an author of several best-selling books for young people. So we're going to play a little game we're calling, "Hey, that's my book."
Okay.
Scott, tell our audience who Sharon will be playing for today.
Dr. Draper, you'll be competing for Melinda McReynolds at the Hartwell School in Cincinnati. If you're able to answer two of the three questions correctly, Melinda will be awarded a free download of the album by the ridiculously popular edgy rock band Rockin' the Standard. I'm showing feelings with the mood. Happy, sad, mysterious dude. Onomatopoeia, sound attack. Noisy like buzz, quack or smack. Exaggerate, hyperbole. That dick gave me a good feeling. A metaphor cancer. Okay.
Here we go.
I'm so scared.
Pressure's on. You won. You did this once before with us, didn't you?
Did I win? I don't think I did.
I think you won. Okay. I can't imagine that you wouldn't.
I think we weren't doing the questions yet, Tim.
Okay. Well, here we go. Here goes question number one. Your most popular book is entitled Out of My Mind, which was published in May of 2012. Lo and behold, in December of 2013, award-winning author Pat White published a book by the same title. What is the premise of the other Out of My Mind book? Is it A?
A 12-year-old genius who finds comfort in counting by sevens.
Or is it B?
A bully who can get himself out of being in trouble by keeping a journal.
Or is it C?
A high school girl who is in a bad auto accident and ends up working with a boy who drove the other car.
I know it's not A.
Okay. Have you heard of this other book, Out of My Mind?
No.
Huh. Okay. Somebody's copying you out there.
I would say.
You have the bully, so your choices that are left are the bully who gets out of trouble by keeping a journal, or a high school girl who's in an accident and has to work with the boy who drove the other car.
I guess C.
And C is correct. Congratulations.
Yes.
With no help from the host, notice. Okay. Well, on to question number two. You published the novel Panic in 2014, and then lo and behold, Lauren Oliver published a book by the same title in 2015. According to the Copycat Panic book, what is this panic thing? Is it A?
A legendary game played by graduating seniors.
Or is it B?
A souped-up dragster used by the main character, Steph.
Or is it C?
A local coffee shop used as the main setting of the novel.
So your three choices for the other panic, the copycat panic, is what is panic in that book? Is it a game played by graduating seniors? Is it a dragster that's used by the main character? Or is it a coffee house that's the setting of the book? What are you thinking?
I need a hint.
No, no, just give us a
question. It's not. I know what it's not. It's not better than Sharon's book.
Give it your best shot. I bet you're going to get it right.
I'm going to guess.
It's panic.
I'm going to guess the speedster.
The dragster car?
The car. No.
Oh, sorry. Okay, bummer. It's actually a legendary game played by graduating seniors.
Okay.
Probably not worth the read, though. Okay, anyway, question number three. Read the real panic, you know? Question number three. Dr. Draper, in 2008, you published a book entitled Copper Sun.
Another Copper Sun?
Lo and behold, in 1927... Oh. Another book, another author, black poet County Cullen, had already used this title for a book. So what do you think of that?
That one I'm aware of.
Oh, okay. There we go. Which of the following is true about County, C-O-U-N-T-E-E, County Cullen, the original author of Copper Sun? Is it A?
He was brutally murdered at the age of 33.
Or is it B?
After becoming a published author, he later earned fame as a dancer.
Or is it C?
He earned a master's degree from Harvard.
So your three choices are that he was murdered, he became a dancer later on, or he earned a master's degree from Harvard.
Okay. I used excerpts from County Cullen's poem in the first chapter of Copper Sun. Okay. I'm very familiar with his poetry. I'm not 100% sure of his, I don't think he became a dancer. I would have known that.
Okay. I think you're thinking pretty well there. Yeah.
Okay. Might have gone to Harvard, but he was such a good poet, he was probably killed because his poetry was just so good.
I don't know about being killed.
isn't that artists or explorers?
he was very refined poet. You know, I love his poetry. All right, let's send him to Harvard.
Are you sure about that?
No.
No, well, so you're picking C, that he got his master's degree from Harvard.
I have a lot of respect for him, although many, many of the early poets did not have a opportunity to go to college. But let's send him to Harvard. I'll say yes. C.
And that's correct. Congratulations. Yes, he did go to Harvard and got his master's degree there.
Okay.
Scott, how did Dr. Draper do in today's game?
Dr. Draper, you got 2 out of 3 correct, and that's good enough to be a winner.
So, yay for Melinda.
Yeah, congratulations, Dr. Draper. You've won nothing, but Melinda in Cincinnati, she just won a free download of Rockin' the Standards, the edu-famous rock band that makes music for 2nd through 6th graders.
She will. That's perfect. She will love that.
Very cool. All right. Well, thank you so much for making another appearance on the show. We're always honored to have you on. I kind of forget where I am and that I'm even doing a show when you're on because I'm just so much into listening to you. So you mentioned your website, SharonDraper.com.
Yes.
Are there other ways that our listeners can connect with you in the future?
If you go to SharonDraper.com, and click contact me, that goes directly to my email. My Twitter is at Sharon M. Draper, and you can tweet me. What else is there? Facebook? Well, yeah, I have a Facebook. Just type in Sharon. Type in Sharon M. Draper, the letter M for Facebook. And but start with the website and click on contact me, and I can tell you all the rest of them, and I can look it up for you and find everything. But I'm someplace out there floating around.
Can you give our listeners an inside scoop on what the M stands for, or is that a secret?
The M stands for Mills, which is my maiden name, which is my daddy's name. And so that's why it's important when I go places. I don't want people to say, here comes Sharon Draper. It's Sharon M. Draper, because that is how I give respect and honor to my daddy.
That's so cool. Is he still around?
No, I lost him last year. Just before, he was the one that kept encouraging me to write this. And we came home from his funeral. The day we came home, the hard copy of this book was at my door. So this is my grandfather. So we should end on something a little more cheerful.
That kind of
I think that's neat. I think that's neat, though. I mean, you love him, and you know that's it's an honor to take that middle initial and honor him that way. So that's very neat.
The book is a gift to him.
Very cool. Well, hey, thank you again, Dr. Draper, Dr. Sharon M. Draper. We are so thankful to have you on again.
It was wonderful. And I'm going to hurry up and finish that next book so that I can come back.
You have an open invitation anytime. You just feel like talking, come on.
Yeah, that's for sure. Tell us a story or something. Sounds great. All right. Well, thanks for joining us. And don't forget, listeners, Global School Play Day, globalschoolplayday.com. Join in on the fun. Unstructured play. There's a decline in our culture of unstructured play, and we're trying to bring it back to this generation of kids. So join us in linking arms and sending a message to the world that kids need that time to just explore and play together.
Over 100,000 right now, Tim.
We passed 100?
We passed 100,000 kids registered. So.
Wonderful. Big awesome. All right. Well, thanks for watching, everybody. And
thanks for watching.
Mom and Dad.
So I could be one of those Bedley brothers. Yeah. Bedley Brothers, Bedley Brothers, bringing education information like no other. Bedley Brothers, Bedley.